Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DeMello talks with EWTN's chairman and CEO Michael Warsaw about the network's legal challenge to the Health and Human Services contraception mandate. Then Jeanette and Dana Cody, the president and executive director of the Life Legal Defense Foundation, take a look at the Supreme Court's recent decision that bans 35-foot buffer zones at Massachusetts abortion facilities. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register. Thanks again for joining us. Our first guest today, Michael Warsaw, is the chairman of the board and chief executive officer of the Eternal Word Television Network, Inc. He joined EWTN back in 1991. He has held senior management positions in the areas of television production, satellite operations, and technical services. Michael assumed the post of chief executive officer in 2009. In that capacity, he oversees the network's strategic direction and mission around the world, and he became chairman last year. With the network's 2011 acquisition of the National Catholic Register, Mr. Warsaw assumed the role of publisher of the Register. And today we're going to explore the network's legal challenge to the HHS contraception mandate, along with some good news that we'll lead with today. Michael, welcome to Register Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's good to be with you all.
Well, Michael, it's always great to have our fearless leader with us, but today we have some bad news, and as Tom mentioned, we have some good news. I'd love to start with the good news. So, last week, the Register and EWTN took home some awards at the Catholic Press Association's annual convention. So, congratulations to EWTN for those awards. I'll briefly name them. Let's see, EWTN took home Station of the Year, as well as EWTN News Nightly took home an award for a story they did on Catholic schools. So congratulations, Mr. Warsaw, for that great work.
Well, thanks. It's great. It's always wonderful to be recognized for the great work that everyone here at EWTN does, and certainly winning Station of the Year award is certainly something that all of us, those of us here at the network and our entire EWTN family, can be very, very proud of. And I'm especially pleased with the award that was given to EWTN News Nightly for a program that is as young as it is to receive award essentially straight out of the gate. That's tremendous, and I think it speaks well of the future for the EWTN News Nightly program and what it has to offer.
I certainly believe that it's been a joy working with them. The Register is obviously a print partner in the news that they do, and we were blessed to receive some awards at the CPA convention. A couple that I'd like to mention because they're important to EWTN in the mission. One is a Best Front Page. We took first place in that and second place in our coverage on marriage, an honorable mention in our coverage of religious liberty, and of course we'll be talking about religious liberty a little bit later on. So we look forward to doing coverage of those three things equally well this year.
Sure, and that's great. And congratulations to you, Jeanette, and to Dan and the entire Register team. I can put my Register publisher hat on here and say how proud I am of the Register team for the great work that's been going on with the Register, particularly these last couple of years since the Register has become part of the EWTN family. It's a great, great resource and complement to the rest of the EWTN services and family around the world. So congratulations, too.
Thanks. And then to our new family member, tell us about that.
Absolutely, yes. We announced last week at the Catholic Media Convention that EWTN has acquired Catholic News Agency and the ASI Prensa Group, which is the sister organization of Catholic News Agency that is based out of Lima, Peru. And the ASI Group is the largest Spanish language Catholic news service in the world. And so while we've been partners with both of these organizations for a number of years in the creation of news content that's used across our web and really all of our platforms, this acquisition and merging these two entities into the EWTN News family of services, I think, is a great opportunity for EWTN to further expand our work in the genre of Catholic news, and particularly with the Spanish language component, to really focus on the creation of Spanish language news content for the U.S. and to further develop that content that ASI Prensa and ASI Digital in Brazil and all of those affiliates that are part of that ASI group family to expand on the work that they're already doing. So it's a great moment and a great opportunity for us to really, I think, expand Catholic news around the world.
Absolutely. It's a large audience, so we're blessed to have that. So let's talk now about the bad news. Last week, we received a decision by a U.S. district court in Alabama that basically said that we had no substantial burden in our challenge to the HHS mandate, and this was a real setback for us. But tell us what happened, and then we'll go forward to what EWTN is going to do next.
Sure. Well, I guess I would say I don't consider it bad news because we know that God brings good out of all things. So yes, it's a challenge, and it's something we have to deal with, and we were prepared for the fact that the court could rule against us when we filed our lawsuit. It's hard to believe, though, that it's really been 2.5 years since EWTN filed the first lawsuit challenging the mandate. As you might recall, EWTN was the first party to file a suit challenging the mandate just days after the government published the final rules on the mandate. So we've been at this and pushing back on the government's intrusion into our affairs for over 2.5 years. We were dismissed, of course, on that first lawsuit. We filed on technical grounds. We filed a second suit in October. We're pleased to have our state attorney general join us as a co-plaintiff in that. Last week, the federal district court ruled that EWTN was not substantially burdened, as you indicated, by the government's rule, that essentially the government trying to force EWTN to provide contraceptive services, abortion-inducing drugs, and sterilization procedures as part of our health care plan, that these were innocuous, that essentially the judge, in her opinion, really indicated that she knew better than EWTN what Catholic doctrine was on these issues and that, you know, we should essentially get over it and move on. So it was very troubling. The decision was very troubling in the way that it was constructed and the way that it was put forward. We immediately appealed last Wednesday, appealed to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in Atlanta and asked the court there to overturn the district court's ruling and also, perhaps more importantly, given the time frames involved, to grant EWTN an injunction barring the government from enforcing the mandate and the penalties associated with the mandate against EWTN as of July 1st.
That's right. And so what happens? I mean, was that granted? July 1st is right around the corner.
It is. It's a few days away, and we've not had a decision from the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals as of yet. The court obviously can take really as long as it wants to decide these matters. And we're certainly hoping and praying that the appeals court will grant us that injunction because, as you say, July 1st is just a few days away, and as of July 1st, EWTN will be fined $35,000 per day, $35,000 per day by the government because we are choosing to maintain a Catholic health care plan that is deemed to be not compliant by the government.
Sure.
It's just absolutely astounding that we are in a position where the government is levying these kinds of penalties against an organization that is trying to stay true to its mission and trying to stay true to its own religious values and religious beliefs.
Yes, and that a judge could call that a non-substantial burden is just beyond a belief. So,
but I think that's a wake-up call and should be a wake-up call to Catholics and all people of faith and goodwill in this country that these values that once were taken for granted are being chipped away, and they're being chipped away bit by bit in court decisions like this one that just came out of Mobile in our case. And that we, as Catholics, as Americans, have to push back on this. And I think that's one of the things that's been important to me throughout this 2.5-year-long fight against this unjust mandate is that it was time for us to stand up and to take a stand and to push back against this.
This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Michael Warsaw, Chairman and CEO of EWTN and the Register's publisher. Michael, I do want to ask you, though, we're waiting for a decision by the High Court, the Supreme Court, on a Hobby Lobby case. And this case, obviously, is also against the HHS mandate. Hobby Lobby doesn't believe they should be required to provide contraception. What are we expecting here? What's the hope?
Sure. Well, certainly it's hard to predict what the Supreme Court will do. Usually those who predict, don't know and get it wrong. So I'm not going to try to predict right. what the court might do in this case. I think, though, there's every belief that the court will find in favor of Hobby Lobby and the position that it's put forward. But the question is how broadly or how narrowly will that decision be? And it seems that within the court under Chief Justice Roberts, there's been a much more of a tendency to keep decisions narrower and narrower, which is why perhaps we're seeing more 9-0 opinions as we saw in the opinion just released with regard to the Massachusetts abortion barrier law.
Yeah.
So the question really is when the Supreme Court releases this opinion on Monday, the 30th of June, will it be broad or will it be narrow? If it's broad, then I think that bodes well for EWTN. It bodes well for many of the other plaintiffs, both on the for-profit and non-profit side, who filed suit against the mandate. If it's narrow, then there's not really any assurance to plaintiffs like EWTN or many of the others, like Little Sisters of the Poor, for example, that the Hobby Lobby decision actually addresses the different set of concerns, similar but yet different, that are put forward in our suits versus the Hobby Lobby case.
Sure. Then this conversation will certainly be continued next week as we get that decision on Monday. Michael, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And thank you so much for your leadership of EWTN and the Register. It means a lot to all of us.
Thank you.
When we return, Jeanette talks about the Supreme Court's decision on abortion buffer zones with the Life Legal Defense Foundation's Dana Cody. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
Dr. Ray Guarendi talks about the National Catholic Register.
The Register is catechetical news. In other words, it teaches the news from the perspective of the catechism. And you can learn all kinds of good things about the church and faithful living through the Register. They cover a wide, wide range. Catechesis, explaining the faith, what's going on in the world, in the Vatican. Good, solid Catholic journalism. The Register helps people cut through the spin. There's no spin in the Register. It is faithful Catholic teaching, analyzing of the news from a Catholic perspective.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DiMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Dana Cody, has been championing the rights of women and unborn children for over 20 years. She started as a lay counselor to women in crisis pregnancies. Then she became a lawyer. And since 1994, she has worked to better protect women and children in the courts and in legislation. Currently, she is the president and executive director of the Life Legal Defense Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization committed to giving voice to life issues in the courts. They filed an amicus brief in the McCullen versus Coakley lawsuit. If you haven't heard about it, that's the one that challenged a 35-foot buffer zone that was required around abortion facilities in Massachusetts. Now, this week, the Supreme Court struck down that law banning the buffered zones in Massachusetts. Dana is here to talk with us about how the High Court's decision affects pro-life organizations all around the United States.
And it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Dana, on June 26, the Supreme Court struck down a Massachusetts law that required a 35-foot buffer zone around abortion facilities in the state. What was your reaction to this news?
Well, my reaction was awesome. I mean, clearly, the purpose of these zones is to limit the message of life to women entering the clinic. And, you know, after having read the decision and digested it for a while, it's great that the majority opinion held that these zones burden more speech than is necessary. And the reasoning was they include the public sidewalks and streets, which are traditional public forums, and the government cannot limit that sort of speech unless there's some sort of record of wrongdoing. And the majority is saying in this case there is not. The disappointing part of the decision is the fact that the court, the majority of the court, says that it's still okay to have these zones under certain circumstances, and saying that the reason is that this particular zone is content neutral, meaning it's not directed at pro-life speech. I think that that's laughable, actually.
We'll break that down a little bit, but let me let me take a step backwards, just make sure our audience understands what the buffer zones actually did in this particular case. I mean, 35-foot buffer zone is a pretty large one. There are some that are just as large and even larger. But let's talk about what the law actually did and who the plaintiff, Eleanor McCullen, was and why she challenged the law. So what was the law and why did Eleanor McCullen challenge it?
Well, the law created 35-foot no-entry zones around any entrance or driveway at a clinic. And there were exceptions for clinic employees or law enforcement or anybody passing through as long as they didn't stop. And so that meant that people like Eleanor McCullen, who is a, you know, an quiet, prayerful sidewalk counselor, she had to stay outside these zones, which were marked with rectangular lines. And in order to speak to women, she would have to talk louder. I mean, common sense tells you that if you were within walking distance and you walk up to somebody and say, like Eleanor McCullen did, may I offer you some literature, the person that she's speaking to could say, yes, please hand it to me, or no, thank you, and keep moving.
Right.
When you have to move back out of the zone, how do you communicate with that person?
Right.
So the sidewalk counselor is put in the position of having to watch for somebody entering the zone and get to them before or talk louder. And, you know, at Life Legal Defense Foundation, we've been defending sidewalk counselors for years, peaceful, prayerful sidewalk counselors. And what happens is typically, and it wasn't happening in this particular instance at this particular clinic, but I've seen clinics that will turn on a weed eater or turn up a radio to keep the sidewalk counselor back and make sure the woman going into the clinic cannot hear them.
Right.
So that was the effect of this particular ordinance, so that only people who support abortion or maintenance workers or law enforcement or fire department or anybody passing through that doesn't stop, only those people were privileged to enter the zone, and people with a message of life were not. And so that's why it was disappointing that the majority of the court said these zones are not content neutral. I mean, when you apply it logically, of course they're viewpoint-based. They're discriminating based on content.
And now the majority gave that opinion. Now, they unanimously decided that this law needed to be struck down. But there was a minority that gave a different opinion. They were led by Justice Scalia. Can you tell us a little bit about what the opinion that Justice Scalia and others had?
Yes. I mean, basically, Justice Scalia said that, again, this court, meaning the Supreme Court, has carved out an exception for speech that affirms life. That it just seems, in past decisions, he's called it the abortion distortion, where, of course, it's aimed at the content of the speech. And in fact, there was a second concurrence by Justice Alito, where his was very short and just to the point and just made sense. And basically he said, thus, during business hours, individuals who wish to counsel against abortion or to criticize a clinic, say, you know, there was a botched abortion and they wanted to warn the woman, if they engage in conversation with people in the zone, it's a crime. Mm-hmm. But if you're an employer, an agent of the clinic, and you enter the zone, you can say, hey, that sidewalk counselor is giving you false information and they're a little bit crazy. Come in, you know, come into the clinic with me. That's okay.
Right.
That's not a crime. So, right. Of course, the result is a content-based discrimination against the life-affirming message.
Right.
And Justice Scalia and Kennedy, they go into great detail once again about how this is just so, I mean, they don't use the word illogical. Scalia's opinion is actually, whenever I read his dissents, if it wasn't such a serious issue, they'd be comical.
But yeah.
He concludes by saying the obvious purpose of the Massachusetts Reproductive Health Care Facilities Act is to, quote, protect clients of abortion clinics from having to hear speech opposing abortion on the public streets and sidewalks.
Yeah,
and one thing that he directly addresses is this idea of Hill versus Colorado, the 2000 decision that created buffer zones where if you're within 100 feet of an abortion clinic and you're affirming life, you can enter the zone, but you can't talk to women unless you get their permission first. And he says that based on the majority's own analysis, conceivably, and he said in the next case it should be argued that by stating that the act would be content neutral if we were concerned about undesirable conduct, and this was the reasoning of the majority, that Hill could conceivably be unconstitutional itself. So
right.
By their own logic, they're leaving it open for Hill to be challenged where there's conduct at issue.
This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Dana Cody, President and Executive Director of Life Legal Defense Foundation, and we're talking about the Supreme Court's ruling on the Massachusetts law that required a 35-foot buffer zone around abortion facilities. Now, Dana, you did mention Hill versus Colorado, that this decision may be taken up by the Supreme Court. There was a leeway that the court might actually take that decision up. Would this decision, though, that was made on June 26, actually affect any other cases around the country?
Well, I think that it would. I mean, for example, I know that there's an ordinance that has been proposed in San Francisco and a couple of other places where the cities are just kind of waiting for this decision in McCullen. And so I think that in the sense that the majority has said this violates the First Amendment, they have to be careful how they word those ordinances. And in fact, in Scalia's dissent, he went so far as to say that perhaps the majority has inadvertently overruled Hill versus Colorado. And mm-hmm. The case that comes to mind that we litigated was the case of Pastor Hoy, where there was one of these Hill versus Colorado type ordinances in the city of Oakland. And he would enter this 100-foot zone and approach women and ask to help them. And it was he who was being blocked and he who was being harassed. And law enforcement only would enforce the ordinance against pro-life speech. And he ended up being arrested, convicted for violating the ordinance, despite the fact that there was a videotape that he was the victim. And so ultimately, that conviction was overturned. But I think that the majority of the court just doesn't really understand what goes on at clinics, just doesn't really understand that everybody that is out there, especially those who have a financial interest in abortion, those who promote abortion, that they aren't acting nicely.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking measures to suppress speech, and you can see it by their conduct. And as a result, people like Pastor Hoy are arrested and convicted and have to engage attorneys and, you know, go through years of court battles to be vindicated. And it came down to simply the fact that we asked the jury, why did you convict him? Because the judge didn't tell us what approach meant, and we thought extending your arm to hand out a leaflet was an unlawful approach. And so that makes me sit back and say, hey, we live in the United States of America. A prayerful, peaceful pastor is arrested and convicted from one of these ordinances, which, you know, it was a Hill versus Colorado rather than the 35-foot zone proposed in Massachusetts. But it's obvious that the purpose of these ordinances is to limit speech.
Sure.
And, you know, congratulations to the majority when they say law enforcement didn't go far enough in Massachusetts. There are other ordinances or other laws that would enable them to prosecute people who do violate the law. Simply the penal code that says, you know, you don't block or harass. The part of the ordinance that they held to be unconstitutional, they said it goes too far.
Sure.
Use the regular law. Enact laws that don't limit more speech than is absolutely necessary.
So thank you so much for clarifying that there are other ways that this will affect other states who have similar laws. I know there are many pro-life counselors who are out there who desire to help the women who are going into these abortion facilities. I know you yourself started in that way. You were a sidewalk counselor, and you then decided you needed to take it up a notch, and you became a lawyer to defend these people. So, Dana, thank you so much for your work. We appreciate what you've done, and we thank you for talking to the Register.
Oh, sure, and I appreciate you having us. Any of your listeners, if they need legal help, tell them to give us a shout.
Very good. Thank you.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the picture of the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks again for joining us this time on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.